It's really hot in Houston. How hot is it? It is so hot. No. I made an omelet on the sidewalk last Tuesday morning. No. Glad that you are here today. Hey, if you got one of these handy devotional notebooks, you can take it out and take notes today if you'd like, and bring it every Sunday. It'll be helpful if you're a note-taking kind of person. I remember when my youngest daughter was 4 years old, there were some toys in the middle of the floor, and I approached her and I said, "Claire, pick up your toys." And she just kind of looked at me with the sass that only a four-year-old can and said, "No." I said, "Claire, pick up your toys." And she said, "You're not the boss of me." And I said, "Yes, I am." She goes, "No, you're not my boss. God's my boss." Oh, yeah. Thank you, Sunday school teacher. So I said, "Claire, you're right. God is your boss, and God's my boss. And since God is my boss, he told me for this time in your life, I am to be your boss. So pick up your toys." About 10 minutes passed. I walk back in the room there. She's sitting in the chair with her feet dangling. She's kind of looking at her feet as she's kind of kicking them up in the air. And she turns around and looks at me. She says, "I'm the boss of my legs." I said, "Sweetheart, yes, you are." Right? We all want to be the boss, right, of something or someone. But basically, what we learn at a very young age, whether we're 4 or 14 or 24 or 44 or who knows how old, we want to have a sense of autonomy and a sense of control. I mean, let's face it, we live in a world that is incredibly changing, unpredictable, and uncertain. So when you live in times of great uncertainty and unpredictableness, if you would, then you want to control what you can control. And that's not bad. That's not a bad thing. It's natural. And obviously, we need to have self-control. And control can be a good thing, but many times, control can take a strange turn where we're trying to control things that we simply cannot control. There's a guy named Chris Sandel, and he's a nutritionist. He works with people as a therapist dealing with kind of mind-body problems. And he says this about issues of control. He says that in our search to gain more control over ourselves and our lives, we frequently and foolishly seek to control other people. But to attempt to control others while perhaps making life more convenient for a while is also to attempt to curtail their autonomy. So we hold on to control because we think that we can actually control other people, or maybe we have this outcome in mind, this conclusion, this exact outcome, and we think if we do this and don't do this and say this and make this move, then they are going to turn out and complete the conclusion just the way we imagined it. And so we try to do everything to control the situation or to control the person. But what happens? Usually that breaks down somewhere. And so what do we do? Oh, we just give up and pray. No, we double down, as we like to say. We triple down. We quadruple down. And we say, "I can do this. I can fix this. I can make this happen. I really can." And when it doesn't happen and things aren't turning out the way you planned, it's easy to get really angry and get really frustrated or to get really depressed and find yourself in the ditch of despair. That's what happens when we, maybe a few of us here, three or four or five people, I don't know, I'll put me in that group, we think we have the power to control the outcome. Now, it's interesting, as we look, we've been looking at different people, biographies, if you would, in the Bible. And one of the biographies in the New Testament that we know a lot about is a guy by the name of Peter. How many of you have ever heard of Peter before from the Bible, New Testament? Yeah, a lot of us have. Most of us have heard about Peter. His nickname was the Rock. It's not bad, right? He was the Rock before there was a Rock, right? Before Dwayne, you had Peter. He was the Rock. He was a superstar disciple. And Peter was large and in charge. Peter dealt massively with issues of control. Jesus asked him one time, hey, who do they say that I am? All the people in the crowds, now that we're kind of going out and doing our thing, who do they say that I am? Everybody else was confused, but Peter said, I know who you are. You're the one. You're the Messiah. Then when Jesus got down on his knees and started to wash the feet of his disciples, Peter said, no, you're not going to do that to me. I'm in control of the situation. Lord, which is funny, isn't it? Lord, you can't wash my feet. He said, hey, you know what? All these other guys, these other 12, what do you call them? Disciples, followers, they may bail, they may betray you. I will never do that. I will never, ever deny you. Then they came to arrest Jesus. Now, what's interesting when they came to arrest Jesus, I think is this interesting detail. This doesn't really apply, but I just think it's interesting. So remember, Judas is the one that betrayed him, and he goes to the authorities, and the authorities said, well, when we go and arrest him, how will we know which one is Jesus out of the leaders? And he said, look for the person with the glow ball on the head, like the paintings, okay? No, he didn't say that. He said, the one I kissed on the cheek. So so he goes and they go to arrest Jesus. And Peter, what does he do? Pulls out his lightsaber, pulls out his sword. Whap! Chops off the dude's ear. But we know what happened to Peter. With all of his control and holding on to power, and I'm going to do things my way, and this will never happen to me, and I'm in charge, and I'm in control. When they got down in the red zone of life, when it was crunch time, Peter choked. He denied Christ, not once, not twice, but three times. And his illusion of control was shattered to smithereens. You ever been there? I've got this. I can handle this. I can control this. And then your illusion is shattered. That's what happened to Peter, and that's what happens to a lot of us when it comes to control. But you know, something happened to Peter, as you know. Something happened to him. After he denied Christ, after he lived in the guilt and the shame of denying him, Christ appeared to Peter 3 days later, alive from the dead, and he forgave him, and he said, Peter, I have something for you to do, and Peter became one of the key leaders in starting this new movement called Christianity. And many years later, he's writing to some people that are scattered throughout the Mediterranean area, and he's writing them. They're suffering, and he writes to them, I think, about dealing with major control issues. And here's what he says in 1 Peter 5. Check it out. Verse 5. He says, in the same way, you who are younger, submit yourselves to your elders. All of you, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another, because God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. Cast all your anxiety. Why does this say that? Cast all your anxiety on him. Cast all your anxiety on him. And the word in the Greek, all, means all. In the original language, it means all, althos. On him, because why? He, God, cares for you. So when we're battling with control, when we think we understand what the future holds, when we think we're in control or we're trying to change this situation or change this person, but we're breaking down, it's not working, we're mad, we're angry, we're frustrated. Or on the other hand, we're down and fearful and depressed. Peter tells us, humble yourself to one another. And then he says, humble yourself under God's mighty hand. So he said, if you're dealing with issues of control and holding on too tightly to things and outcomes that you really cannot control, he says, listen, you've got to get under in order to get over. Okay? We have to get under in order to get over. We have to get under the mighty hand of God. That's humility. We talked a little bit about that last week when we looked at John the Baptist. Humility is recognizing there is a God, recognizing that God has made me, I am created in his image, and I am under him. And life goes better. Life works when I get under his leadership, his rule in my life, when he is the boss of me. So I have to get under in order to get over. Humble yourself towards one another. And what's interesting about the background of this passage, really in the original Greek, what that means is to humble yourselves, it is to tie on the apron as if you're washing someone's feet. So I'm sure that Peter was flashing back to that time where he refused initially to let Christ wash his feet. Humble yourself, serve one another, and get under the mighty hand of God. So how do we do that? What does that look like? I have a friend of mine who lives in a different city, and he runs a massive national and international 501c3, and hundreds, maybe thousands of people under him. Godly, godly guy. I mean, he's just a great, great man of God, and I deeply respect him. But about 7 or 8 years ago, he was at a basketball game, high school game, watching the game. All of a sudden, his heart is about to beat out of his chest. And he has no idea what's going on. And pretty soon, he gets up. He says, I need some help. And he goes back, and he literally collapses. They think he's having a heart attack. They call 911. The ambulance takes him there. He goes to the hospital. He goes to the ER. They check him out. Nothing wrong with his heart. The next week, he gets other tests. The next week, he gets others tests. And they cannot find anything medically, physiologically wrong with this guy. But he still is having this major, major issue where it feels like he's having a heart attack. Well, after a while, they discovered my friend was having a panic attack. Panic attack. Many of us have dealt with that before. You can't explain it. It hits you from nowhere, and all of a sudden, boom, it puts you down on the ground. So he started obviously praying. He had other people praying for him. He started changing his diet. He started trying everything and anything the doctors would say. And then, of course, he tried the holistic methods like we all do, right? You know, and he tried everything. But nothing was really happening. And finally, somewhere, month after month after month of the process of trying to fix things, he said he felt like he heard God saying to him, instead of trying so hard to get better, why don't you start trusting me more? Instead of spending so much time and energy on trying to feel better, why not start trusting me more? And in that moment, he was instantly healed. He never dealt with a panic attack. No, this is not TV. This is life. But he went back into the situation, and he was able to deal with his panic attacks and had freedom from them. After a while, he went back into that with a different mindset. A mindset of trust, a mindset of taking the worries and the concerns about what was going to happen next and casting that anxiety, that stress, that pressure onto God. So how do we get under God's mighty hand in order to get over one word? Surrender. That's it. What did he preach about in 11:11? Surrender. That's it. What do you write down in your little notebook? One word, surrender. That's all you need. Put it in your phone. Surrender. One of the most difficult things you'll ever do in your life is to surrender. To say, God, I can't control this situation. I can't control this person. I can't control the outcome. So I surrender this. I surrender my anxiety. I surrender my stress. I surrender everything to you because you care for me. You ever heard of the phrase, let go and let God? Yeah. I say let go and trust God. We let go. God, this is in your hands. The results are in your hands. The outcome is in your hands. I let go of the control. I just let go. I have to because that's what you desire for me to do. We let go. We trust. Boom, we cast it upon him. God, this problem is too big for me. It's overwhelming, the pressure day by day. I can't handle it, God. So I cast it. I throw it on you. You're bigger than I am. You're greater than I am. And at the same time, you do care about what I'm going through right now here in this moment. The way we deal with this overwhelming or unhealthy sense of control that we have, we all deal with, is surrender. Surrender. Now, a lot of us in here, and you'd have no reason to know who this was, but probably never heard of the name of Reinhold Niebuhr. Strange name. But Reinhold Niebuhr and his brother Richard were incredibly influential theologians in the 20th century around the world. But I bet you've heard of this prayer that Niebuhr wrote, at least the first half. Here it is. Here's the first half of the prayer. It's called the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Y'all heard of that? Some of y'all, yeah. It's almost cliche now, right? People kind of mock it in movies. God grant me the serenity. But yeah, if you've been a part of any AA, any 12-step group, you've heard, you've recited this prayer. The first half of the prayer is great. God, I need peace. God, I need some discernment to figure out of all the things in my life I want to change, what can I change and what can I not change? God, give me that wisdom to understand that. So it's great. But the second half of Niebuhr's prayer, that's not quoted in meetings that I've heard, I think is more powerful, is equally as powerful. Listen to the second part of the Serenity Prayer. Check it out. He says, living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace, taking as Christ did the sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that he will make all things right, check it out, if I surrender to his will, that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. Bang. God, help me to live one day, one moment at a time. Help me to accept the reality of what I'm dealing with and the circumstances as it is. God, help me to change the things I can change, influence the things I can influence. But God, over everything, help me to surrender so that I might do your will. Surrender. That's how we deal with control. Holding on. Thinking we can fix and solve everything. Some things we can solve, some things we can't. God calls us to follow him. God calls us to influence. But we cannot guarantee outcomes and results. That's not in our job description. And that's frustrating. I look back over the times in my life where I've had to let go and surrender. It wasn't like I just kind of read a Bible verse or heard some great song and said, wow, that's a good idea. I think I'll surrender. No. Usually it's pain that brings surrender, isn't it? Usually we come to surrender kicking and screaming. And surrender is so paradoxical. It's so counterintuitive. I mean, you know, college football season, we're in what, week two? I guarantee a lot of us in this room are going to go to, you know, a college town the next, you know, several weeks, and we're going to go there, we're going to get fired up, we're going to watch the pregame shows and hear all the great wisdom of what's going to happen in the game, and we're going to get ready to do our cheers and our gestures, and some of us maybe even will paint our face, okay? And we do that, why? Because we want to go to the game, we want to cheer, we want our team to win. Go fight, team, win. How do you win in life? How do you win in marriage? How do you win as a mom or a dad? How do you win? Surrender. That's how we win. By surrendering. That's how we win. That's how it's done. Peter finally learned that lesson. Paul finally learned that lesson. Surrender. We're not surrendering responsibility. It's not like we're just going to surrender it and, man, I'm going to put it in autopilot. So Captain speaking, we're now cruising at altitude of 38,000 feet. We are arriving in the Los Angeles area. I mean, no, you can't put it on autopilot. This is not United or Southwest, right? This is life. We have to fly. We have to do it. We've got to take responsibility. So I know I'm going to think, okay, if I surrender, I like it. I like it. I like it. I like it. It sounds great. I mean, that sounds great on Sunday, but listen, I live in a dog-eat-dog predator shark week world is my life. And if I surrender, I will be chewed to bits. Not true. Pastored here a long time. I've seen a lot of Uber type A, tough, driven people go through hellacious circumstances. And if you ask them, how did you do it? Was it by toughing it up? Was it by this? And they would answer you if they could come and take the mic right here today. They would say, I did it by surrender. 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 One of my favorite authors is a philosopher at Boston College, and his name is Peter Kraft. And here's what he said about the model of surrender. He said, the supreme model for this total surrender is Jesus himself, of course. His perfect surrender did not make him a dullard, a dish rag, or a doormat. It made him a fire. Like the fire from the burning bush. He is the fire from the burning bush. The fire that did not destroy, but enlightened and surprised and revealed and changed everyone he met. Jesus surrendered everything. He laid it all on the line. All he wanted to do was to do the will of the Father for us. And he set the world on fire. And he set us on fire. Surrender. It's key. It's critical. It's not a one-shot thing. Oh, you're talking about that. I've already did that. I've done that years ago. No, listen, surrender is something that once you grasp it, once you start living in it, you've got to go back again and again and again. You just do. It's just the way it is. And when we surrender, it's like a death. Because we're surrendering really important things and really critical, heart-wrenching issues and people and that process, and it's like a death. But in that death, there's a resurrection. There's a resurrection. If you want to be first, become last. If you want to be the best, be a servant. If you want to follow him, if you want freedom, if you want to win, surrender. Cast. Because he cares for you.